Well, good evening. When I was a young man, let's say a child, when I was 7, 8, 9, 10, 11 years old, we didn't have video games. We didn't have a lot of things that young people have today. And so we went outside and we played. And one of my favorite things to do was to make tents. I would get an old blanket or an old sheet or something and drape it over something or the other thing and camp out. Camp out in a tent. I just love doing that. You'd have to pay me a lot of money to do that today. I wouldn't want to sleep out in the backyard. Really, I just hurt my back rolling over in a soft bed. But when I did that, I always thought about the tent that the Lord stayed in. I'll talk to you about it for a few moments tonight. Talk about the tabernacle. The tabernacle. It's a fascinating thing, the story of the tabernacle in the Bible. It's one of those things that just keeps popping up in Scripture. And I'm going to actually talk about this in two or three lessons. So this one tonight is just kind of an introduction to the concept, and I'm just going to make a few remarks. I preached a long sermon this morning, so I owe you a little bit. So it'll be a short one. Revelation 21 and verse 3 is at the end of the Bible. And it tells us about heaven. It tells us about after the resurrection and the judgment and where the righteous go and where the people who aren't so righteous go. And it says this here in Revelation 21 and verse 3. It says, "And I heard a loud voice from the throne saying, Behold, the tabernacle of God is among men, and He will dwell among them, and they shall be His people, and God Himself will be among them." It's interesting, isn't it? Tabernacle. Well, what is it? What's a tabernacle? Well, a tabernacle is just a tent. It's really all it is. And God is going to dwell among people in a tent. Tent of cloth, a portable dwelling made of animal skins. Something used by nomadic people looks something like that. Now, you may have all of these ideas about heaven. Does it your imagination, does heaven look like that? A tent? Probably not. But like everything else in the book of Revelation, what John describes symbolizes something. It's a mistake to take John's description of things in heaven too literally. Everything that he says about heaven is really something borrowed from something else or somewhere else in the Bible, including this reference here. Why is there a tent in heaven? What is the point of that? Well, a tent or a tabernacle or a dwelling like this word describes is really a place to live. It's really what it is. We don't think of tents as being some place to live. We think of a tent as being some place to temporarily camp out. But for so many people in the ancient world, and for a lot of people today, they live in tents. It's their home. And especially for nomadic people, you know, people who have to move about from place to place, tents kind of a practical thing. The patriarchs were nomads and they lived in tents. Abraham, Isaac, Jacob lived in tents. And for the longest time, Israel lived in tents. They certainly lived in tents in the wilderness. And that's where the idea comes from. It's a home. But it really is something that starts all the way back in the Garden of Eden. Because in the Garden of Eden, there was a state or situation or circumstance in which God and men dwelt together. And by men, of course, I mean Adam and Eve. And I'm sure it looked exactly like that. That's exactly what that looked like. Well, imagine the Garden of Eden any way you want to. What made the Garden of Eden special or wonderful was not the trees or the fruit or the plants or the vegetation, all of which I'm sure were wonderful. What made the Garden of Eden or paradise was the fact that God and Adam and Eve could commune together. They were together. And wherever God is, and that's kind of the concept of the tabernacle, the tent, wherever God is, when He's with you, that's a special place. That's a good place. Think about what the Garden of Eden had. It had man and God living together. It was a situation in which there was innocence and purity. There's no sin. There was a river flowing from it. There was an unending supply of food, of sustenance. It never went away. And it was guarded by the cherubim, the angels of the Lord, whose specific function is to guard God's presence. The cherubim are the angels whose sole task is to surround God's presence. That's what they do. And Eden had all of those things. And it was wonderful. But it was lost. It was lost, of course, because of sin. And Adam and Eve were sent out of Eden, and they were cut off from God. They lost life. They lost God's presence, and they lost that place without sin. They lost that, and they lost that eternal sustenance, the tree of life. They lost these things because of sin. And the world is the way that it is because of that. God made us to live with Him, to be with Him, but we're not with Him. We live in a world that's messed up, full of sin, and all of the heartache, the recriminations, the violence that ensued after Adam and Eve were cast out of the garden, all of that has continued to this day. And everything about this world that makes you sad, everything about this world that hurts you, that shames you, even the things about yourself. It's not the way it's supposed to be. And perhaps the biggest loss is one that we can barely even understand, and that is that we're not with God. And because we've never been in God's presence, we don't know what it is that we're missing. And we have an inkling of it, we have a sense of it. Much of the emptiness that people feel and the sorrow that people feel and the grief that they feel and the heartache they feel is it all goes back to that there is something missing in our life. And that something is God. God wanted to rectify that situation, and so he found a man named Abraham. A man who lived in tents, and he said, you know, through you, I'm going to do something about this problem. And ultimately, through the family of that man came, of course, Israel, the nation, the descendants of Abraham, and God made a covenant with them. He made a covenant with Israel. And what God did when He made that covenant was that he told them to build a tent. In Exodus 25 and verses 8 and 9, let them construct a sanctuary for me, God says to Moses, that I may dwell among them, according to all that I am going to show you as the pattern of the tabernacle and the pattern of all its furniture, just so you shall construct it. Well, what's God need a tent for? Well, he doesn't need a tent. But he wanted to make a statement. He wanted to say something to Israel. And that something is, I am going to live with you. And you are going to live with me, and we are going to live together. That's what the tabernacle was. The tabernacle was a tent in which the presence or glory of God would make its presence. And the purpose of that was this, that I may dwell among them. Which is exactly what that verse in Revelation 21 says, that we'll get back to eventually. And it goes back to this statement right here, that I may dwell among them. Verse 44 of Exodus 29, I will meet there with the sons of Israel, and it shall be consecrated by my glory. I will consecrate the tent of meeting and the altar. Something that you may not be aware of, but in the garden, when God came and met with Adam and Eve, they could see His glory. His glory was there. And they shared that glory. They had part of that too. And when they sinned and lost that, they saw that they were naked. And Paul talks about this. He talks about in Romans that we're naked without the glory of God. And so God says, I'm going to live among you. And my glory is going to be in this tent. Verse 45 of Exodus 29, I will also consecrate Aaron and his sons to minister as priests to me. I will dwell among the sons of Israel and be their God. I will dwell among them and be their God. Again, that's exactly what Revelation 21:3 says. I will dwell among the sons of Israel and be their God. Exodus 40 and verse 34, then the cloud covered the tent of meeting and the glory of the Lord filled the tabernacle. And that was an indication that God's presence was there. God was there. Now, as we'll see in a moment, we understand that the fullness of God was not there, but certainly a symbol of His presence, an indication that He was there. And the significance of the tabernacle, the tent of God's dwelling, is that all of the Israelites and all of these tents that surrounded this tent, which was in the middle of the camp, all of them could come out of their dwellings and look over and see God's dwelling and see that smoke during the day and the fire, the fiery pillar at night, and the glory of God shining from that tent. And they said, God is with us. God is living with us. Which would have been a marvelous thing to see when you think about it. Here's another depiction of that arrangement and all. And the account gives us very specific descriptions of how the various tribes of Israel surrounded the tabernacle. And what you'll notice, for instance, in this diagram is a kind of a layout of the various tribes. And you'll notice that there are these gaps between the tribes, the 12 tribes. It's interesting, isn't it? The way Revelation describes heaven, the 12 gates. You see, the description of heaven in John's vision is a description of this. And it's not meant to tell us that this is literally what heaven looks like. It's meant to convey the concept, the idea that is represented by these symbols. God living among His people. That's the idea. And of course, you've seen various models and visions and pictures of what the tabernacle looked like. And in that tabernacle, inner sanctuary, which is the throne of God, and the Ark of the Covenant, which is the throne of God, and that the Shekinah, or glory, or presence of God, would be visible to the priest when he went in there. And he only went in there one time of the year. The high priest would go in there on the Day of Atonement, but the presence of God was in there, and it was such an important thing that when the priest went in there, that he did everything right, that he cleansed himself, that he wore the right clothes or robes, that he even had little bells on the fringes of his garment, so that when he went in there, the presence of God wouldn't kill him. Because in our current state, coming into the presence of God is an extremely hazardous affair. And so that's what that place is. That room right there. 10 by 10 by 10 cubits. A cube, if you will. A cube of gold. Which is the place where God's presence is. And it's no coincidence that New Jerusalem that comes down out of heaven is described that way. As a cube of gold. Because that's what the most holy place was. The place where God's presence was. So the wilderness tabernacle was a place where man and God could dwell together. For throughout verse 38 of Exodus 40:38, for throughout all their journeys, the cloud of the Lord was on the tabernacle by day, and there was fire in it by night in the sight of all the house of Israel. And here's another depiction of what that must have looked like. And it must have been an amazing thing to see, but it's part of that progress toward what God really wants to instigate with us. Exodus 5:22, and there I will meet with you, and from above the mercy seat, from between the two cherubim which are upon the ark of the testimony, I will speak to you about all that I will give you. And that must have been what it looked like right there, and those cherubim, because I saw the ark of the movie, the Ark of the Covenant. That's what it looked like, so it must have looked that way. But the idea is that God's presence is there. And in order to approach that presence, the people would have to be without sin. They'd have to be pure. But they, of course, had sin. So how do you get rid of sin? Well, you have to have sacrifice. The blood of animals would purify them in a way, symbolically. Not actually, but that was the ritual, that was the rule. And you would wash with water, and you would be sprinkled with the blood of sacrifice. And then, and only then, could the priests, and only the priests, could enter into that sanctuary and approach God. But they offered sacrifices there for all of the people, and the idea was to purify them, to make them holy, so that God could live among them. You must be holy, for I am holy, God said to Israel. And then, doing so, the priests had certain things they had to do. Exodus 49, you shall take the anointing oil and anoint the tabernacle and all that is in it, and it shall consecrate it and all its furnishings, and it shall be holy. Because God is holy, where He dwells must be holy. All of this is symbolic. It's supposed to communicate certain concepts and ideas about what God is trying to do with us. Exodus 30:19-20, and Aaron and his sons shall wash their hands and their feet from it when they enter the tent of meeting. They shall wash with water that they die, or when they approach the altar to minister. So there was this laver full of water that they would use to wash themselves so that they could be cleansed and clean before they approached God. It's conceptual, right? A river flowing from it. Well, where does that come in? Well, there actually was a couple of rivers in Eden. So what's the river that applies in the case of the tabernacle? Well, Moses, wherever they went in the wilderness, he would take his staff, and by God's instruction, He would strike a rock and water would flow from it. And the water would be for the people, to provide for them, so that they could live there with God. And there was also this statement, Psalm 78. Talks about he guided them with a cloud by day and with the light from the fire at night. And he split the rocks in the desert and gave them water as abundant as the seas. He brought streams out of a rocky crag and made water flow down like rivers. You see, you know, it's not a coincidence that when John describes heaven, it's a place where rivers flow out from the throne of God to provide water for the people who live in that sanctuary, that place where man and God live together. It all goes back to stuff like this. It goes back to Eden. Streams out of a rocky crag and made water flow down like rivers. It's a place of unending sustenance, like that water, of course. There was the manna from heaven that gave the Israelites something to eat every single day. They didn't have to sow or till or do anything. The food was just there, just like in Eden. And of course, the table of the showbread that they made out of that stuff to place before God, guarded by a cherubim, of course, the cherubim above the Ark of the Covenant. And in that covenant, of course, in that ark was a covenant, and the covenant was the basis upon which harmony and peace was made between Israel and God. And the cherubim were even woven into the fabric that surrounded the inside of the tabernacle, indicating that they were guarding God's presence. All of it, of course, is a model. It was a copy. It wasn't the actual dwelling place of God. It wasn't the wasn't heaven itself, it was a copy of heaven. And the Hebrew writer tells us about this in Hebrews 8 and verse 5. A copy and shadow of the heavenly things, just as Moses was warned by God when he was about to erect the tabernacle. For see, he said, all things according to the pattern. The reason that Moses had to follow God's very elaborate and detailed guidelines for building the tabernacle was because it was only a copy of something in heaven itself. But why a copy? Well, because we weren't quite there yet. But we were on the way there. On the way to the real place where man and God will dwell together. And this is only trial run, if you will. Practice. Conceptual. Symbolic. But nonetheless important. Important to get this copy exactly right. The cloud itself was only a symbol, and they knew that. The Israelites knew that. And God said as much. And Stephen in Acts 7 talks about this. He says in Acts 7:48, however, the Most High does not dwell in houses made by human hands. As the prophet says, heaven is my throne, earth is the footstool of my feet. What kind of house will you build for me, says the Lord? For what place is there for my repose? And so they knew, everybody knew, God said, and they knew that the tabernacle and the temple later built by Solomon was not actually where God was living, but it represented that concept of God living with His people. Because that's what God is trying to accomplish. The Most High does not dwell in houses made by human hands. But we humans can get to be in the house where God really dwells. Of course, animal sacrifices themselves did not cleanse the worshipers, not truly, not completely. The Hebrew writer also tells this, it's impossible for the blood of bulls and goats to take away sins, and it's impossible for the blood of animals to cleanse the true heavenly sanctuary. Something better than that was going to be required, but we'll talk about that in a later sermon. But all of this, even as a trial run, even as a practice run, depended on Israel keeping the covenant. And they didn't. Exodus verse 5 through 6. Now then, if you will indeed obey my voice and keep my covenant, then you shall be my own possession among all the peoples. For all the earth is mine, and you shall be to me a kingdom of priests and a holy nation. And that's what God wanted them to be. He wanted them to be holy. He wanted them to be separate and distinct, to be pure, to be righteous. And He wanted to live among them. But it was not to be, because they didn't obey His voice, and they didn't keep His covenant. They failed to live up to those requirements. 38:10, they did not keep the covenant of God and refused to walk in His law. Tabernacle tells us of God's desire to live with us. Eden and the first tabernacle began that process. But these efforts failed because of human weakness and sin. Something more, something better had to be done in order to really accomplish what God wanted to accomplish, to make us pure and holy so that we could live together and God could cast His tabernacle over us and dwell with us. And He gets us there. But there's more to the story. You know, when I was that little boy making those tents, I really did think it would be neat to see that tabernacle and to live in one of those tents out in the wilderness. I know better now how difficult that would be. But what we have in the church is so much better than that. And even yet, there is more to come. To one day be with God, to be in His very presence, to see His glory, to dwell with Him, and for Him to dwell with us. That's why we're here tonight. If you want that, the thing that God has obviously been working for and planning and building for a very, very long time, it is yet to come to its complete fruition, but it's coming. And if you want to be part of that legacy, that history that's been going on for thousands of years, then you need to become part of God's people. You need to become one with the true tabernacle of God, which is made possible by God through Jesus Christ. If you want that for yourself tonight, why don't you confess Christ, turn away from sin, and be baptized and be washed in the waters of baptism, so that you can come into God's presence. Why don't you do that tonight? Come forward and say you will as we stand and sing.